This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Americans are known for volunteerism. Visitors to our country are often impressed by how we pitch in to help each other. Perhaps it stems from our pioneer roots, where being able to lean on one another in times of need was a matter of mutual survival. That spirit continues in the 21st century, but just to give it a little shot in the arm, we celebrate volunteerism each year in the U.S. and Canada with National Volunteer Week, which kicks off this coming Sunday. In advance of that time, we're going to take a look at the impact volunteers have on our region with some folks who know it well. Sarah Degnan is the volunteer coordinator for the United Way of the Central Carolinas. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And she is here at the very last minute because Sean Garrett, the executive director, who, like yourself, is a millennial, had a baby yesterday.
He did. We're all very excited for him.
It's a first. Man having a baby.
It is. Imagine that.
I hope all is well. Eric Law is executive director of Hands on Charlotte, which describes itself as your volunteer headquarters. They will put the finishing touches on National Volunteer Week with their 23rd annual Hands on Charlotte Day, Saturday, April 19th. More on that later. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
And Leslie Bridger works in the healthcare industry, but is also both a volunteer and also a millennial. Maybe you're wondering why we're saying millennial. I've said it twice, three times now in this conversation, and that's because they're going to change the shape of things as we go through the next 20 or 30 or 40 years. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Was my anecdotal observation at the beginning of this program about America's zealous volunteer nature an accurate one?
Absolutely. Volunteerism is something that's been really an integral part of American life for a long, long time. And we like to think of it at Hands on Charlotte as the purest form of philanthropy. And this is a very giving nation. But it's gifts of time, talent, and treasure, not just people with the ability to write big checks. When people give of their time and talent, they're exercising philanthropy and making other people's lives better.
Does that surprise people when you tell them that? Because I know that's one of the approaches that you use with people, because not everybody has a big pocketbook. Some people don't have any money, but they're perfectly willing to help out. Does it surprise them that they are considered philanthropists?
Absolutely. It's very surprising, and it's empowering. People don't think of themselves as having the ability to be philanthropists, to impact people's lives in a positive way. So that broader definition of philanthropy, and you think back to the Greek origins of the word, it means love of one's fellow human beings, however you choose to display that.
He just used the word philanthropy, empowering, Leslie, and you are a volunteer. Have you ever thought of it as being empowering?
I believe it is empowering to be a volunteer, not only for yourself, but also for the people that you're working with as well, to show them that they're important.
Now, I was going to ask Sean Garrett, who is the new executive director of the United Way, how Charlotte compares to the rest of the country in terms of its volunteer spirit, because he's worked in Chicago, I think someplace in Minnesota, in New York, and for United Way worldwide. Maybe you don't know the answer to this question, and I hate to throw you a curveball here, Sarah, but how do we compare? Do you know?
I don't know compared to other cities specifically, but I will say that I think Charlotte does have a very giving spirit, just by the example of people in this room today.
Well, let me ask you a different question then, and that would be, we go through this United Way campaign every year that we see the big signs downtown with the thermometer rising as the money comes in. Which is more important to you guys, the money or volunteers?
I think they go hand in hand. Like Eric said, they're both philanthropy, and we really encourage people to come out and volunteer to see where their money is going in the community and what their money actually does to make a difference. Because that's what we really strive to do, is to make our community a better place for everyone in it. And so that comes through money and hands-on volunteer service.
And as the volunteer coordinator for United Way, it's a very small staff, I'm told, the volunteer department. How many people is it?
There's two of us.
Two of us, yes. You could use some volunteers, couldn't you? What's your biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge right now, I think, is creating different opportunities. So we spoke a little bit about millennials and what do millennials want versus the retirees. People are looking to get their families involved with young children. So what are different ways that we can get people that have different needs and wants involved in our community? I would say across the board, everyone wants to make an impact. That's not the issue. The willingness and want is there in Charlotte. It's just creating the activities that fit their lifestyles, finding their passion for them, and making sure it's something that they feel like they're benefiting from as well.
We hear a lot about, particularly about the United Way campaign every year, because it does bring in significant amounts of money, money which is put to good use in the community, and it's a lot of money. We don't hear a lot about volunteers working for either the United Way or the partner agencies that the United Way helps to fund. How many volunteers do you think work for United Way and all of their various supported organizations?
Last year, we had over 6,000 volunteers come through our volunteer center.
Is that a lot for a city this size?
I believe so. Myself and the volunteer director, Leslie Ring, we are busy all the time. There's never a slow time. It's year-round engagement. And that's just people that come through us. There are people that do things on their own. There are people that go through Hands-On Charlotte. So we definitely don't see everybody that comes through. But we continue to grow every year. I know in the first quarter this year, we've done more volunteer projects than any other first quarter in the history of United Way.
Why do you think that is?
I think people are just a little bit more aware that they can do something, that there are options out there for them.
Why do you think that is? Why are they more aware?
I think the media has helped with that. There's been a really big push lately around homelessness in Charlotte, and it's gotten the attention of folks in the community that they can step up and make a difference.
Eric?
Technology has made a huge difference in the general public's awareness of community needs.
You're talking about social media now?
Yes, social media and other forms of technology. People are much more aware than they were years and years ago. And I was raised here in Charlotte, and I am not a millennial, so I've seen things change dramatically over the last few decades. People are much more aware of what the community needs are and who the nonprofits are that are working to address those needs. We as nonprofits are also doing a much better job than we did many years ago of telling our own story, of explaining to the general public how we work to address those needs, and how they can help us
as
volunteers.
How did that happen? Why are you better at it? I have a lot of why questions.
Yeah. We've gotten a few wake-up calls over the last few years.
Was it the recession?
The recession was just the most recent one. The first one, in my experience, I've been in this business for about 18 years now. Started working at Foundation for the Carolinas back in 1997. And when 9/11 hit, just 4 years after that, people don't think of 9/11 as really impacting the economy, but it really impacted nonprofits because people got a little more frightened of things. And when people are frightened, they don't give as much.
Huh.
And when they do give, they give specifically to relief organizations. Donations to the Red Cross went up during that time. Shortly after 9/11, I left Foundation for the Carolinas and went to work for what was then known as United Family Services, now Safe Alliance. And Safe Alliance and other United Way member agencies actually had to make some cuts during that time because overall donations to United Way dropped during that time in 2002. So that was one hit that we all took, and organizations had to cut back. The recession definitely hurt a lot of us in many, many ways, and all nonprofits began to rely more and more on volunteer support to get their work done.
I'm assuming that because Hands on Charlotte is holding its 23rd annual Hands on Charlotte Saturday in a couple of weeks, that you've been around for at least 23 years,
yes,
maybe longer. How old is Hands on Charlotte?
Hands on Charlotte was established in 1991. Our co-founder, Lisa Quisenberry, was a young marketing executive at what was then known as First Union National Bank. And Lisa and about 15 of her friends, young professionals, all relatively new to Charlotte, wanted to find a way to give back to the community but didn't know exactly how. Now, around this time, late 80s, early 90s, volunteer centers were cropping up all over the country, and there were two parallel networks. We all remember the first President Bush and his speech about 1,000 points of light. The Points of Light Foundation was established during that time, and there were volunteer centers that grew as a part of that network. There was another network that was then known as City Cares, and there are organizations starting with New York Cares, Boston Cares, Chicago Cares, and Hands on Atlanta was part of that original City Cares network. And Hands On Atlanta hired as its first executive director a young woman named Michelle Nunn, the daughter of former Georgia Senator Sam Nunn. And to make a long story short, in 2007, Points of Light merged with the Hands On network. Hands On Charlotte was a pioneer member of City Cares, later the Hands On Network, and we're now part of a network of 260 volunteer centers worldwide.
And how many volunteers work for you on an average year?
Average year, we'll mobilize between 6,000 and 7,000 volunteers, and we'll give back 30,000 hours to our partner agencies.
Do you work carefully or closely with United Way or United Way organizations, or are you completely separate?
We are separate organizations. We're independent as opposed to some of our hands-on network affiliates that are internal to United Ways, but we do partner on a number of projects. We work with a lot of United Way member agencies, and we work with United Way and some of our corporate partners every year on a Charlotte Playground build, which I'd love to talk about later.
Okay. Do you find, both of you, at United Way, Sarah, and at Hands-On Charlotte, Eric, that volunteers come back year after year, or is there a lot of turnover?
I think right now there's a lot of turnover. I think one of the things that I'm challenged with and that what I try to do is to help volunteers find their passion so that there's not that turnover. We want to help folks explore all the different volunteer opportunities and the different fields of service that they can go into. But that's what I was going to add when you said the why do you think people are doing it? I think organizations like ours make it easy for folks to volunteer now. We set up the projects, we get them coordinated, we give them all the information that they need, so that helps them get out there and volunteer, and we take a lot of the work off of their shoulders.
Leslie, how long have you been a volunteer?
I've been a volunteer with the United Way for 2.5 years now.
And how many different volunteer activities have you been involved in? Have you found your passion, in other words? And how long did it take you to find that passion?
Well, I was lucky enough to find my passion with the first project I started with the United Way. I volunteered through Project 1000. The goal is to put 1,000 tutors, readers, and mentors in the lives of at-risk youth in Charlotte. And I found my passion through working with a second grader, now fourth grader, named Marlon.
Which I'm going to talk about Marlon and your work with Marlon a little bit later on here. But what have you found to be, and maybe you can answer this question from your personal point of view, what is the motivating factor among the people who volunteer and who then come back and volunteer over and over again? What's the motivation there?
There's an enormous sense of satisfaction that volunteers get from helping other people, whether it's helping individuals in a tutoring relationship or doing something that benefits large numbers of people. Maya Angelou had a quote where she said that among its other benefits, giving liberates the soul of the giver. So we place a great deal of emphasis on that. And when I'm working on a project, I like to take a moment or two of reflection after we're done. Mm-hmm. So we're not just focused on getting the job finished, but making sure that people realize what they get out of it, that they get just as much out of it as the people who benefit from their work.
What motivated you to start, Leslie?
I believe my mom actually motivated me to start. I was lucky enough to grow up in a family that really placed a large importance on volunteerism and working with our communities. So luckily, I had that backing from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. And has the motivation changed? Have you experienced what Eric mentioned a second ago?
Yes, I'll definitely agree with Eric on that. I think now my motivation is seeing Marlon's face light up, seeing her little friend's face light up. Just last week, I actually went and Marlon was sick at school. And so she was not there in the cafeteria, but her little friends asked me to please stay and sit with them and read with them. So.
Oh. Leslie Bridger is a volunteer. We'll talk about exactly what she does. Eric Law is here from Hands On Charlotte and Sarah Degnan from United Way of the Central Carolinas. The South, by the way, has the highest number of overall volunteers. We'll find out why in a moment. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the ITVS independent lens film The Homestretch, following three homeless teens fighting to graduate school while proving that being homeless does not mean being helpless. Premieres Monday, April 13th at 10 p.m. on WTVI PBS Charlotte. And Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 18 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. It was 150 years ago this month that the American Civil War came to an end, and Confederate President Jefferson Davis and his cabinet met for a last time here in Charlotte. Tomorrow at 9, we talk to Jefferson Davis's great-great-grandson, who is trying to rehabilitate his great-great-grandfather's image. That should be interesting. Tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Iran and world powers agree to a framework nuclear agreement after 18 months of negotiating. What's in the agreement, reaction here and abroad, and prospects for a final deal.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about volunteerism in advance of National Volunteer Week, which begins this coming weekend. Are you a volunteer? We'd like you to tell us what motivates you to give back this way on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE, or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're here with Eric Law, Executive Director of Hands on Charlotte, Sarah Degnan, Volunteer Coordinator for United Way of the Central Carolinas, and a volunteer. Leslie Bridger is a volunteer. You're also a millennial. Two of you are millennials here. And according to the Chronicle of Philanthropy, millennials are more likely than their parents to consider volunteering to be a very important civic obligation. The Associated Press says that even as young people's involvement in activities like voting, jury duty, and keeping up with the news is declining, I'm not sure that's really true. It's on your smartphone now. The rate of volunteering is rising. You understand why volunteering is so important to millennials? I got two millennials here, so Leslie and Sarah, give me the lowdown here.
I think one of the reasons why I find volunteering important is because maybe I don't have as large of a checkbook at this point as my parents do. So I can't give that treasure back at this point, so I'm trying to use my time and talent. And there is a dollar amount that volunteer organizations associate with that time. I believe it's about $24 now an hour. So maybe I'm not actually giving a dollar amount in money, but I am giving a dollar amount in my time and talent.
And I think millennials can be a huge asset to volunteer to nonprofits, like with their time, with their skills. Like Leslie said, they may not have the huge monetary contribution, but they have a lot of skills and knowledge that they can bring to the table, especially in areas that nonprofits may not have the money to hire staff to help with. So the skills-based volunteering, I think, has been very popular with the millennials.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on because that's something that kind of cropped up during the recession when a lot of people mm-hmm. were unemployed or underemployed, and they put their job skills to work on a volunteer basis. You are the volunteer coordinator for the United Way of the Central Carolinas. There are only two people in the office who have to come up with all these experiences, these volunteer experiences. Would you say that more of your volunteers are younger people, millennials and slightly older, or are they older generations who come to volunteer because they're retired and have a lot of time on their hands? Which seems to be the more potent force?
I get a good mix of both, to be honest. With my Project 1000 effort, the readers, tutors, and mentors, a lot of those are the retirees, retired school teachers, retired people that have time during the day to go into the classrooms and read with the students. However, I do have a lot of millennials that have recently graduated from college, like Leslie said, and they may have moved to Charlotte, and they're looking for ways to get involved in the community. So volunteering is a great aspect. Not only does it help make impact in our city, but it's also a great way for them to network and get to know other people. So I think they're looking for different types of activities. The motivation may be a little bit different, but I also have high school students now that come and are looking for volunteer projects. So many of them are required to have community service. So that may be influencing a little bit more of the younger generation.
When younger people are required, do they put their spirit into it, or they just show up because they have to get the credit?
It's probably a little bit of both.
Yes. Eric, what's your experience at Hands on Charlotte? What's the fundamental age group that participates in this?
All over the map, really. But one thing we found about younger volunteers is that they tend to jump around to different projects. Whether you're talking about high school students, college age, older millennials, young professionals, they jump around and try different things.
Because they haven't found their passion, or because they get bored and they have activity deficit disorder or something?
A little bit of both, I think. But that's one of the things that we actually tout at Hands on Charlotte. We have an online calendar of volunteer activities. typically about 125 to 150 each month. And they can choose from a variety of things, whatever fits their schedule, whatever fits their passion. And we encourage them to try different projects, and maybe they'll latch on to one. I've got a former board member who started working with Hands On Charlotte as a volunteer about 15 years ago, and she's been doing the same project, tutoring adult learners at Central Piedmont Community College, for about 14 of those years. So she found her niche and has stuck with that.
There's a progressive think tank that I'd never heard of until yesterday. It's called NDN. The New Democratic Network, must be associated with the party, I don't know. But they say about 1.3 million more millennials offered their time without compensation in the last several years. And the South has the highest number of overall volunteers. If you think that's true, I don't know that you do, is it because we've had a surge in population, people are moving here from other parts of the country, or is it because of something that's particularly Southern in our character?
I think it may have a little bit to do with our population growth here, but part of it, frankly, is just the weather. It's easier to volunteer. There are a lot more outdoor projects. People are more likely to leave home when it's not freezing outside.
If you were living in Boston this winter, you probably didn't volunteer a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot easier for people to get out and volunteer, whether it's an outdoor project or an indoor project. So it's easier for people to do. We have Martin Luther King Day weekend activities, and we, I think this year, had about 600 or 700 people come out and volunteer at one of three different school sites. They were indoor projects, but people didn't hesitate to come out. Glad it happened in January, not in mid-February when we had our single-digit temperatures.
Sean Garrett, who was supposed to be here this morning as the new executive director of United Way, his wife had a baby yesterday, so we let him off the hook. And Sarah is here, Sarah Degnan. I don't know if you can answer this question because Sean worked before he came here for United Way Worldwide, and they track participation in volunteerism, and they've been tracking very carefully millennial participation in volunteerism. And I was wondering if you know what United Way is seeing in that research. If you don't, that's okay.
No, I do know. I'm a little bit familiar with it because we do obviously participate in the United Way Worldwide Network. I know this past year United Way has offered alternative spring breaks for the millennial population. You know, the kids that are still in college, set them up with projects. Over 1,000 of them participated in that. We've also got a couple United Way Worldwide Network initiatives. One is the Young Leaders Group. We do this here in Charlotte. It's a group for 40 and under that want to get involved in service projects in the community. And so I can go into all sorts of details about that now or later. But there are United Way Worldwide initiatives that come down and really encourage this group to get involved and volunteer in the community.
There's a lot of talk about millennials, and I think that's because you have replaced or are replacing the baby boomers. And there was a lot of talk about the baby boomers in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and now we're being pushed aside by you people. but I'm told that the millennials are volunteering more than their parents did. If that wasn't a behavior that they witnessed among their parents, why is it a behavior that they've engaged in?
I think one small reason is I think there's actually more support from the community and from their employers. There's so many more employers that offer volunteer time. They get paid volunteer time. They do group projects together. Their employers are encouraging this type of behavior at work, so it translates into their personal life as well. I think that's one thing that we've seen kind of spike recently at United Way is the amount of corporate projects and support from corporations promoting volunteerism.
And Leslie, you told me that your parents you come from a background where they did volunteer. What kinds of things did they do, and how did that impact you and your decision to do this?
Well, my mom actually still to this day volunteers at a local elementary school in Wilmington, where I'm from. Mm-hmm. So I guess I came by it a little honestly, choosing communities and schools as the partner agency to work with when I was deciding the Project 1000, which agency I was going to go through. But my father and mother both do all sorts of different things, whether it was going on mission trips with us through our church or even just buying someone on the side of the road a dinner that evening. So,
and when you were younger and you saw them do this, because sometimes volunteering can take you away from the family. Oh, mom has to, she's not going to be here tonight because she's doing something for the church or whatever she's doing. And that can be like, oh, rats, a kind of an attitude on the part of the kids. So when you saw this behavior in the parents, did you wonder why? Did you ask them about it?
I certainly engaged in a lot of conversation with them about it. I was a very curious child, to say the least. I think the question why probably came out of my mouth more than it did in the beginning of the radio show with you. So my parents obviously put it in, just explained it to me from a very young age as to why this is important and what they were doing. And they also engaged in a lot of activities that we could do as a family. So I think that's important too. And people don't want to spend as much time away from their children in an age where more women are in the office place. They don't want to then take time after work to go and do volunteer work. So trying to get the family involved is important.
Which we'll also talk about. There's a lot of elements to this that people maybe have not considered. Again, according to the New Democrats Network, the percentage of college freshmen who believe that it is essential or very important to help people in need rose to its highest level since 1970. 70% when the last of the idealistic baby boomers entered college. They believed that as well. Have baby boomers maintained that belief since their college days of helping others? And if not, is that attitude among millennials likely to taper off as it did in their parents?
I think the baby boomers may have lost it for a while, but they're getting it back as they approach retirement age. One thing you'll see if you look at volunteer statistics is that the number of annual volunteer hours per person goes up dramatically when people reach retirement age. They've got some time on their hands. Right. They can devote more hours per week or per year to volunteering. So what typically happens, young professionals come in, they volunteer individually or in groups. Career and family may get in the way, and they have to cut back on their volunteer time. Mm-hmm. Frankly, there aren't as many family-friendly volunteer opportunities out there as there should be. And there are some challenges with that, with involving the whole family. Some of our nonprofit partner agencies have minimum age requirements for volunteers. And there's really no getting around that. You don't want a two-year-old working on a habitat build, for example.
Right.
That's just a fact of life. So with few volunteer opportunities that are truly family-friendly, they have to cut back a little bit on their hours for a while. But as they get older, we're seeing a lot of new volunteers at Hands on Charlotte in their 40s and older. Now that their kids are older and are starting to leave the nest, they're starting to step up their volunteer time.
You have said that the typical Hands on Charlotte volunteer has been a young professional, probably new to Charlotte, probably single, probably female.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where are the guys?
They're everywhere else. Now we're trying. We've been trying to attract more of them.
Single women.
Yes. You would think these guys would wise up, and some of them do. And we can claim credit for a few marriages and other relationships. So it's worked out fairly well.
The other thing you say is that these young professionals move up in their careers, which makes them busy, mm-hmm. and they start families, which makes them busier still, and that is when their volunteer efforts begin to wane.
Yes.
And so I guess, would this be accurate, that if you have a spirit of volunteerism in your youth and then you're torn away from it because of the exigencies of everyday life and the need to make a living and raise a family, that that is when you start giving money, and then perhaps at retirement, when the salary has stopped, you go mm-hmm. back to volunteering because you've just changed the paradigm a little bit.
Exactly. And what we're working at doing a better job of is maintaining contact with our volunteer base throughout their life cycle mm-hmm. so that when they can't give of their time, they'll give us their money. And when they can give of their time again, then they'll rejoin us. And that's not only us at Hands on Charlotte, but all of our partner agencies, United Way, nonprofits everywhere.
Is there a particular personality profile or trait that seems to define who is most likely to be a volunteer or who is most likely to give to a charitable organization? Is there something that you can identify? We have big data now. We measure everything. Can you measure that?
A sense of home. makes a big, big difference. And as someone who grew up here in Charlotte, this is my home and I love it and I want to see the quality of life get better. Now, we've had a lot of relatively recent arrivals in this town throughout my lifetime. And one thing we find is that people think this is a great place to call home, a great place to raise their families. And that makes them more likely to give in whatever form they can. So even when their family and work demands make it more difficult for them to give of their time, they'll find a way to give to make life around here better.
You're a volunteer coordinator. Tell me if you can see if you can spot a good volunteer, because there's something about them that says that's going to be a volunteer.
I find that the one of the qualities that I see come across in our folks are people that have benefited from a volunteer in the past. So not, you know, it doesn't have to be extreme, but they've experienced the good deeds from someone else helping them out. And they kind of want to pay that forward. That seems to be a quality that really gets a committed volunteer going and continuing going, because they've experienced firsthand what the difference really can be and how it does make a difference, even if it's a small difference. In someone's life, it helps them.
You know, you've all talked about helping people find their passion, because if you go to volunteer and you find out you don't like the work or you see something about the cause that bothers you and you drop out, then you're no longer part of the pool. So how do you help them find that passion? How do you, if somebody is disappointed or disinterested suddenly in the work, how do you reel them back in, or do you have to, or can you?
I think that's one of the benefits of working with agencies like United Way and Hands on Charlotte, is we have so many partner agencies within the community that we can help them find other options. You know, if they really think their passion is homelessness and they go out and volunteer and realize that was great, but that's not really what I want to do. I really want to work with children instead. We have those options there for them to come in mm-hmm. and try the next thing. That's one of the biggest benefits about our young leaders group that we have. We have 2 to 4 projects set up every month, and folks just have to sign up to come, and they can, you know, they're there with other like-minded people, and they can learn about the agencies.
Is it a struggle to find volunteers, or is it something that you've been doing it so long now that mm-hmm. that you have a reasonable pool of people from which to draw and make a phone call and say, we need you?
Yes, there are always people out there, and there are always people, new volunteers that sign up with us. We, in a typical month, we'll have between 75 to 100 new volunteers go through orientation with us.
That's a lot.
So there's always a new wave of folks coming in, even as people are getting older and with increasing demands and can't work with us as much. Mm-hmm. So there are always new folks who want to get involved. But one of our roles at Hands on Charlotte is in educating them about really the entire nonprofit spectrum. All the different needs that are out there, so that, as Sarah said, if you haven't yet found your niche, there's another area of interest that might get you excited. If it's not housing and homelessness, if it's not education, if it's not the environment, if it's not the arts, we can find a wide variety. We've got relationships with hundreds of partner agencies that we can help get you plugged into.
Denise on Facebook writes, I am a guardian ad litem, a child's advocate in court. It is heartbreaking and rewarding at the same time. Children in the foster care system need someone totally unbiased to stand up for them and be their voice. The best job I've ever had. I get more satisfaction from being a volunteer, and to me, there is no price on that. I only have 10 seconds. Have you heard that before?
I have. And honestly, those are our biggest advocates, people that can do it and share their own experience.
Yes. You mentioned alternative spring break. When we come back, I want to find out how I can participate in that. I'm just kidding. No, we'll find out how people participate and what that's all about. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Community Blood Center of the Carolinas. Local businesses and religious organizations are needed to host springtime blood drives. CBCC relies on blood donors to meet the needs of 27 local hospitals. CBCC.us. Iran and world powers agree to a framework nuclear agreement after 18 months of negotiating. Diane Rehm and her guests will talk about what's in the agreement, reaction here and abroad, and the prospects for a final deal that's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation at about volunteering, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
Lights, loud music, food, drinks. Sounds like a rave. But at one nightclub in Manhattan, the guests are children.
We joke with the bouncers when we come in for the first time because we say, you have the opposite job today. Your job is to keep everybody in.
I'm Amy Scott. Forget bounce houses and Chuck E. Cheese. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about volunteerism with Sarah Degnan, Volunteer Coordinator of the United Way of the Central Carolinas, Eric Law, Executive Director of Hands on Charlotte, and Leslie Bridger, who is in fact a volunteer. We'll talk about her volunteer experience with Marlon in just a moment or two. Howard emails, I'm listening to your show this morning and wanted to share my experience as an American Red Cross volunteer. In addition to working in my community several times a month, I've participated in several national disasters, including hurricanes, tornado outbreaks, and various large-scale wildfires and flooding events. While the work is difficult and the hours are long, usually 12 to 14-hour days, the entire experience has been incredible. No glitz, glamour, or salary. But I've spent weeks in Manhattan related to Hurricane Sandy, and I've traveled all around this wonderful country, some 15 states so far. I can't remember any vacation I have taken which could rival any of these trips. Now, that plays into precisely what I wanted to talk to you next, and that is the alternative spring break. United Way created this. About 1,000 college students give up their traditional week of debauchery and volunteer to be at United Way chapters across the country. Did this grow out of a request by students to do something different, or did you see this as an opportunity to put these at-liberty college students to something gainful?
I think it grew out of their request. They're just really dedicated folks that wanted to continue to serve. They enjoy doing that. And so for them, that's how they wanted to spend their time off. It was not a twist your arm or voluntold type opportunity. It's people that step up and want to do this.
Emergency preparedness and disaster relief is a growing area for volunteer opportunities. So glad to get Howard's email there. We actually have a couple of AmeriCorps members working with Hands on Charlotte now who are focused on that and working with city county government for emergency preparedness. Now, thankfully, we don't have a lot of natural disasters here, although I do remember Hurricane Hugo. But we're looking to bolster our ability to mobilize volunteers when disasters do strike.
How do college students find out about this alternative spring break?
A lot of them are run through their colleges, whether they have a Center for Civic Engagement or Service Learning opportunity. I actually worked with some students from Davidson College this spring break. They were supposed to go out to Kentucky to do some work out there, and the ice storms that we got came through, sent them back to our area, and I helped them find a couple different projects in Charlotte, and they did at least two projects every day. They spent from 8 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night going out and just helping wherever they were needed. And I actually set them up with one organization. They loved it so much, they're now going back to one of their classes and evaluating the efficiency of this nonprofit organization because they just thought it was so great. So you never know where you're going to make the connection and people are going to fit. But they're great students to work with, and they're going to lead us in the future.
This was evidently the weekend for articles in The Observer and USA Today, and I think The New York Times, about millennials and about cities working very hard to attract millennials to come to their city. Some, I'm told, are paying millennials to come. There was an article, I think, this morning in the paper that talked about how the workplace has to change to reflect the growing demands and changing demands of this generation. But studies show that one of the things that help young people decide where to locate is if their workplaces will support them in civic engagement, in volunteering. Surveys show 39% of millennials say a company's volunteer policies have affected their decision to interview for a job. 55% say those policies played into their decision to accept an offer. You're nodding in recognition of that. How pervasive is that?
Well, it's growing because corporate volunteerism is growing in general. More and more companies are recognizing the importance of being out there, being good corporate citizens, not only with their dollars, but with their employee volunteer time. Large and small-scale corporate projects are really an increasing part of what we do at Hands On Charlotte. We manage volunteer projects for companies large and small. We worked with Belk a couple of years ago when they celebrated their 125th anniversary. One of the things they did was 125 days of service. They did over 300 school improvement projects across their 16-state corporate footprint, and we and our fellow Hands On Network affiliates across the South helped to manage those.
You're a reading buddy,
Leslie.
Through communities and schools at Montclair Elementary School. Why did you choose that as your volunteer activity?
I chose that probably selfishly because it's easy, or so I thought. It was
what did you think
in my head, it was going to be very easy to take one lunch break a week and go and chat with a child. And I have found it to be so fulfilling, and we were talking in the car on the way over here just how those emails and reports and phone calls that you need to make later that day, they vanish from your mind for that 1 hour that you're with that child. And just really coming back to what's important in life, not so much all the running around and making sure everything's checked off your to-do list, but really giving back to a child.
You work with a fourth grader. Her name is Marlon. How do the two of you connect?
So the first day, I really kind of questioned what I'd gotten myself into.
Why?
I was lucky to have Sarah give me a sheet of different questions to ask. So we both filled out this sheet, and she still has that sheet to this day of what my favorite color was, what my birthday was, my dog's birthday. She made Parker, my dog, a birthday card this year. So just starting off could be a little bit of a struggle, but now we've found Our relationship is really blossomed.
Starting off is a struggle because it's like any two people coming together. You don't know what to talk about and you don't have anything in common. And she is, after all, a fourth grader. You're a little older than she is. So it's awkward.
It can be awkward in the beginning, yes. And I think we've talked a little bit about the difference between working with a group and working with an individual type setting. And I really find working in an individual type setting fits my personality best. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that one-on-one conversation, but I also can appreciate and understand why someone would want to do a group setting, more social aspect.
Now, you don't read to Marlon. You read with Marlon. Actually, you read the same book that she is reading, and then you discuss the book. Is that how it works?
It depends on the week. Sometimes we do that. Sometimes if she has forgotten her book, I read while she is eating her lunch, and then she kind of picks up whenever her lunch is finished. Other times, if it's not nice outside or the classroom space that we utilize is already taken, I read with a bunch of other fourth graders in her classroom. So it depends on the week, but I do try to read some of the book proactively.
Are you reading out loud?
We are reading aloud.
And the purpose of this is what?
To really help with her reading comprehension, not only reading comprehension, but also her fluency and making sure that she's not just reading the words, but truly understanding mm-hmm. them.
What kind of impact do you – how long have you been doing this with her?
2.5 years.
What kind of impact do you think you've had?
I'd like to think I've had a very positive impact on Marlon's life. Her teachers tell me she's a lot more confident now in her classroom. She's willing to raise her hand, willing not only to raise her hand and ask a question, but also raise her hand to read, which I don't think she would have ever done a couple years ago.
Did she have trouble reading before?
She did. She comes from a family with two Spanish-speaking parents. Her father speaks a little bit of English, but not enough to really help her with her homework. And I know her parents want to help her, but they don't have the ability to do so.
That's right. So is her comprehension higher than it was when you started?
It is. They do it on an alphabetical scale, and she's now almost up to her grade level. I believe it's an O. And when we started, she was well below her grade level at about a G.
Wow.
Now, I will add that Leslie is being modest and has not said that she's also received letters from Marlon's sister about just the impact she's made in her life in general and being a great role model. So I just want to give her a little shout out for that aspect of it as well.
Essentially, you're a teacher, and I think all of us have had an experience with at least one teacher in our lives. I've had three or four that I can point to who have made a profound difference. I don't think those teachers knew it while it was happening. I don't think you probably understand fully what is happening between you and Marlon, but you will be one of those people, I think, in her life that when she's older, she'll look back on as somebody special who made a difference. Do you ever think about that?
My parents try to remind me that a lot because I am a little bit modest and humble and try to keep it that way. But I do hope that I am someone that really does make an impact on her life for the long run.
And how much of a time commitment has this been for you?
It's 1 hour a week. So just one lunch break a week, I go over there. Sometimes
you leave your job to do this?
I do. And I'm very lucky. They do. They know this. My manager knows where I am right now. So I'm very lucky to work for a corporation that does place such a large impact on volunteering. We actually have all these different 8x10 photos around our office of different volunteer projects that we do throughout the year. I think that also helps sometimes. If you can look at your department, around your department and say, there's only one person from our department in this picture. We need to get more people. Sometimes a visual reminder for people really helps.
You mentioned, Eric, the corporations are getting involved in this, and some of them want to encourage their employees to do things on a volunteer basis. Mm-hmm. What is driving corporations? Because what this is doing, obviously, is taking people like Leslie out of the workforce for an hour, and they're not docking her pay.
Right.
So what's in it for the corporations?
Well, a part of it is just good PR, showing that corporate employees are out there in the community in force sometimes. Sometimes we'll have hundreds at a time working on a single project or multiple projects, and it reminds the public what a good corporate citizen the company is. The other aspect is team building. That goes a long, long way, and that's one of the attractive things to millennials as they're considering where to go to work, the camaraderie of working together. I've seen corporate employees who didn't necessarily know each other, were in different departments, even in different cities, joining forces on a single project, and it helped strengthen their sense of loyalty to each other and to the company.
Leslie, you're part of United Way's Young Leaders Group, and I'd like to hear from you and also from Sarah about that. What does that group try to accomplish?
The Young Leaders Group is actually really focused on service projects. It was founded over 10 years ago here in Charlotte. We started out doing 4 service projects a year. Last year, we did over 35. We work with all different partner agencies in the area. They've also grown to include networking and professional development opportunities. We've gotten great support from this group, from corporations that want to invest in their young professionals being involved in the community. To go back to what Eric was saying before about the team building and stuff, I also think volunteering allows people to come back to work with a renewed sense of energy. You know, you can take that 30 minutes to an hour off at your lunch break, go out and hang out with these amazing kids that put things in perspective. And I know when I go see my lunch buddy, I come back to work and I'm a little bit more motivated and refreshed and not getting that 2 o'clock feeling of I need to take a nap because it's a long day. It energizes folks. And I think that's a benefit to the employers, actually.
You've been nodding about that, Leslie. You're obviously in agreement. Why do you think that happens? Why do you come back energized?
I come back energized because I've spent time away from work reflecting on what's most important. And I think that helps me actually sort out my priority list, what's most important throughout the day, and just making sure that I do take those mental breaks that sometimes when you're sitting at your desk and eating lunch at your desk, you're not doing it. I find that my work is not as high caliber when I do not take the breaks. Even though I'm working more hours, I'm not working as diligently and as thoughtfully as I should be.
George in Gastonia writes, I worked over 300 hours at Daniel Stowe Botanical Garden last year, helping take care of one of the largest collection of orchids in the country. They are There are retirement homes, assisted living facilities, and hospitals that are in need of volunteers also, and none of these, to my knowledge, are United Way partners. Is that true, do you think?
There are a couple. I'm sure there are. I mean, we have 82 in our five-county region, so we obviously don't touch all of them, but one of the great things about the Volunteer Center is that we will help people find volunteer opportunities, even if it's outside of our partner agencies. So obviously we're a health and human service organization. We don't have partner agencies that work with animals. It's just outside of our mission. However, if you call me and tell me you want to work with animals, I will work with you to find that opportunity. So
we work with several senior living facilities, managing game nights, and even have a very popular set of pet visits projects where volunteers bring their pets to interact with the residents.
One of you mentioned skills-based volunteering. I know that, Eric, that became popular during the recession because professionals were underemployed and they put their skills to work. Has that opened opened a door to different volunteer opportunities, and has that continued as the economy has recovered?
Personally, I think it's waned a little bit as the economy has started to improve. People really wanted to put their skills and talents on display in 2009 and 2010. I think it's waned a bit. So frankly, sometimes we struggle when we post a skills-based opportunity. We struggle to get an adequate number of people to sign up for those. But when we do, it tends to work out really, really well. We're working not only with our nonprofit partners, but actually with Mecklenburg County government, because due to some budget cuts they've had in recent years, they're working with us to recruit volunteers to help out in some of their county departments, and we've had some really good success stories. We had an unemployed budget analyst who came in to look at a draft budget, and a lot of her suggestions ended up being incorporated in the final product.
So next week is National Volunteer Week. What will be the local thrust of that?
For us, it's recognizing and thanking all the volunteers in the community. It's really our turn, time to turn the tables and say thank you for everything that you do. United Way will be recognizing Project 1000 volunteers at the Knights game on Sunday. Leslie was actually part of our first class of award winners a couple years ago with awesome Project 1000 volunteers. And we actually are working with Hands on Charlotte for the Governor's Award breakfast that we'll have on Tuesday. These are the top volunteers in the state.
And I only have 30 seconds left, Eric, but Hands on Charlotte will hold its 23rd annual Hands on Charlotte event on Saturday, April 18th. How does that work?
HOC Day is the biggest volunteer event of the year for us, and we'll be at six different locations. Visit www.handsoncharlotte.org/HOC Day 2015 for more information and to sign up.
Good plug. Well done. Eric Law is Executive Director of Hands on Charlotte. Sarah Degnan is a Volunteer Coordinator for the United Way of the Central Carolinas. And Leslie Bridger is a Reading Buddy volunteer in the schools. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE.